Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, a board-certified OBGYN and menopause specialist. My new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it really takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Every week, I sit down with medical experts, cultural icons, and powerhouse women to talk about what really matters: your health, your power, and your future. We're covering hormones, identity, finances, relationships, and so much more. New episodes drop every Tuesday. Listen to and follow Unpaused with me, Dr. Mary Claire Haver, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
KJ and Lyons, how can you not talk about the NBA without a little bit of the boys at the Bada Bing? You know what I mean, John?
Oh, yeah. You know what's funny is I actually finished rewatching The Sopranos for like the third time about a week ago. And then, of course, the story broke.
Yeah, so we will get into the NBA gambling situation here later this hour here on KJ and Lyons, but that's Jaylen Brown saying the Celtics were going to learn from that 76ers game. Yeah, right. Here's what did it say? What are two things they say you can't coach? Speed and what else?
Height.
What do the Celtics not have?
Height.
You can't coach it. You can't coach it. You can't grow it. You can't. This is absolutely bonkers when I think about what the Celtics are facing up against them. Tell me when you don't hear height, okay? Tomorrow, Pistons, what do they have?
They have, well, besides Cade Cunningham, they have some height, right?
They have height. Jalen Duren. That dude is a monster. There's no answer for the Celtics. The Pelicans, they have
height. Zion Williamson, especially.
The Cavaliers have
height.
The 76ers didn't even use their height.
Yeah, their height was a ghost, and they still
thank you. The Rockets in
the Rockets
MA.
Might be the tallest team in the history of the wasn't that the thing on opening night? That was the tallest lineup in the history of the NBA they started?
The Jazz. Maybe that's a night off.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of like who the big what
big other than Markkanen and
I might be missing one. I'm like trying to think off the top of my head what
big November 3rd, it would fit, but November 3rd is when we might finally see the Celtics about the same height as their counterparts out there, where their size isn't an issue.
And Stan Van Gundy said it last night on the broadcast, and he was right. And he said, you know, you can be athletic, you can be this, you can be that. He said, but at some point, size is going to matter in an NBA game. And we saw it last night. We saw it to an extent. I mean, they should have beat the 76ers anyway, but we especially saw it last night. And look, I'm not trying to be like sports radio doom and gloom here, KJ, but the Celtics might be staring in the face of a 1-5 or 0-6 start, depending on how this goes. Like, Detroit's a pretty good team, and you're on the road. Then New Orleans isn't good, but it's the second night of a back-to-back. Cleveland's a top-3 team in the East. Philly already beat you. Now you're going there. Houston is an elite team. Like, they could very well be the underdog in all of those games they have coming up starting tomorrow over the course of this week. And I'm not saying they're definitely going to lose them all, but like that Philly loss on opening night really hurts based off the schedule they have to start.
Well, first of all, number one, the narrative was, hey, our backcourt is still one of the strongest backcourts in the league. And while you might talk about the front court, don't forget there is a backcourt too. Yeah, a rookie broke Iverson's record, and Tyrese Maxey went out for 40. What did Embiid have, 4 points?
And he didn't even play in the fourth quarter.
And didn't play in the fourth quarter.
By the way, no Paul George.
Right, well,
and just
there
I'm
hasn't
saying,
been Paul George in 3 years
but
for the most part.
But that's two of their max guys not playing in the fourth quarter, and you had a 13-point lead early in the fourth quarter.
No,
and he lost.
This is what's more embarrassing is Joel Embiid was a non-factor from the tip, did not play in the fourth quarter, and the 76ers won with their backcourt. Maxey and Edgecombe scored 74 of 117 points. And you're going to tell me the strength of the Celtics is their backcourt when you just got waxed poetic by a rookie and by, what is Maxey, 6'1", 6'2"?
Yeah, something like that. Yes. And Edgecombe's obviously a rookie. But that's the thing, because I think Derek White's been all right, but Peyton Pritchard has not given them much at all as your other guy. And that was the guy, I mean, sixth man. And look, it's only two games, so we don't want to overreact that much. But, I mean, that's the sixth man of the year last year, a guy who, you know, helped you win a championship. And I know he wasn't great in that playoff run, but he helped you win a championship. Who, going into the year, was like, hey, Anthony Simons has been a starter for 3 years in Portland, but we're going to sit him on the bench because that's how much we believe in Pritchard. And last year, if Peyton Pritchard had a bad couple games offensively, well, you had Tatum, you had Porzingis, you had Holiday. You could survive that. Now?
Can I say the quiet part out loud? Can I say it?
Say it out loud.
Peyton Pritchard is only starting for marketing reasons. That's it.
I don't think that's why.
Peyton Pritchard is not a starter.
I don't think that's the quiet part. I think that's not the part.
Well, okay. Well, he should not be. You're going to tell me that you bring in a guy that just started 205 games previously, and now he's going to come off of the bench on a team that it's begging for scoring, begging for it? Like, that's the other part of it. It's almost like maybe Peyton Pritchard really is a sixth man. Like, look, Jordan Clarkson, yeah, he's only been a starter one time since he won sixth man. Tyler Hero, that's a different story. Naz Reid is still a role player. Brogdon is retired, and he only started like 30 of his last, like half of his last games before his career was over. So, like, this is a marketing thing for Peyton Pritchard because, like, if he stinks it up when he's on the floor to start, now somebody's got to pick it back up, and when he goes back out there, like, that's not his energy. His energy is to say, I'm going to make sure that what the guys in front of me gets taken care of. But now if you have to be one of the guys that takes care of things and you're not getting it done, now we got to wait for somebody else on the bench because there's no Al Horford there to help out.
That's Hauser, another guy I didn't mention. Yeah,
Hauser is your starting power forward. Like, in what world? What world do you think, like, yeah, I really feel confident about the four position with Sam Hauser out there?
And I think a lot of this comes down to Anthony Simons' defense, right? Because he's been a terrible defender for pretty much his entire career. I think he's a more complete offensive player than Pritchard, but I trust Pritchard more defensively. Not that, I mean, he's a great defender, but Simons has been so bad. If Simons can play good defense over the first, say, 2, 3, 4 weeks of the season, and Pritchard kind of can't get out of this slump, then I think you might see that switch made where Simons is your starting guard and Pritchard's back to being the sixth man of the year. Because, like, I know we're talking about them not hitting shots and all this. Like, their defense has been a big problem. So, if, I mean, you give up 117 to a Sixers team without Embiid. I mean, Embiid 4 points out of that 117, a 42-point quarter to the Knicks as well. You're down by 20 at halftime as well. So, as frustrating as their offense has been, they've had some huge problems on defense so far this year as well.
Yeah, in terms of points allowed by the opponents, the Celtics are the fourth worst in the NBA. When it comes to giving up points, they are the worst, second worst, 29th out of 30th. Back to the Simons issue with Pritchard and Simons and Pritchard. Would you rather have offense in there and sacrifice a little bit of defense, having Simons in there, knowing that Pritchard can come off the bench and give you defense and give you scoring, or put Pritchard in there? The defense kind of gets lost if the offense kind of gets lost, and then have Simons come in there who has no defense.
I would stick with Pritchard in the starting lineup for now because I think I want to see, can Simons, because I think Simons, to his credit, has had some pretty good effort on defense the first couple games, but I want to see that for a few weeks and also coupled with Pritchard still struggling before they make any sort of change. And I think another guy that's worth mentioning here, and he's a rookie, so there's only so much you're going to get there, is Hugo Gonzalez. I mean, you can make the case he was their best player last night for long stretches of that game. Maybe if he plays on opening night, you find a way to win. He was really good. He was a little lost at times, but he was really good on opening night,
right? Like, if you put someone else that could give Maxey or Edgecombe a problem.
Just a little bit of a problem. Those guys had no problem.
But last night, I mean, the Celtics gave up 21 offensive rebounds.
I know, that's brutal.
So can we kind of call the Mazzulla thing kind of a little bit dumb? Like, hey, as soon as you give up an offensive rebound, I'm subbing you out.
And there's line between, okay, are you giving up an
offensive
rebound? Are you giving up an offensive rebound because you're not working hard enough, or are you giving up an offensive rebound because everyone else is 5 inches taller than you? Like, last year's Celtics team with Porzingis and Horford and all that, yeah, they should be a good rebounding team. This year, when, you know, Jaylen Brown and Hauser are your 3 and 4, like, you're going to get out-rebounded a lot. Like, there's only so much those guys can. And even Derek White, who's a really good rebounder for a guard, it's still with that caveat of for a guard. Like, they're going to get out-rebounded a lot.
Let me ask you this, and see if you can name this off the top of your head. How many guys do the Celtics have over 6'10"? What, Horford's what, 6'10"? So how many, yeah, Horford's 6'10". Horford's a 6'10 guy. How many guys are 6'10 or over?
So I'm off the top of my head, I'm going to say 2.
Yeah, technically that's right. Garza and Kedda.
Yeah, okay. And then what? Because what's Boucher? Isn't Boucher at 6'10"?
6'9". He's 6'9", okay, yeah. And then Williams the two-way is 6'10".
And Tatum is 6'10", right, when he eventually comes back, but obviously not there now.
Tatum is 6'8".
Okay, my bad.
Yeah, so this is a small team, and this kind of goes back to even what I was saying when Tatum was here playing. Like, I'm going to have a concern over time that if Tatum is your leading rebounder and your leading scorer, you're going to eventually ask too much for the scorer who you're going to need down the line, right? Like, if Tatum's got to snatch 10, 11 boards, and then you get to the end of the game, you're like, okay, now we need you to take the final shot. You've been worn out. You're worn out.
And like, we saw that in the Knicks series last year, where Tatum had to grab a bunch of rebounds because Porzingis was ineffective,
right,
and they didn't have enough. And, you know, he got worn down a little bit. Like, at the end of game two, he had the ball ripped out of his hands.
Yeah, well, that's my concern.
I hear you. Yeah.
Is, we knew that Tatum was going to be out. Why wasn't there a serious addressing of at least someone who can rebound, someone who can put back shots, someone who doesn't have to depend on scoring for this team to move? I would be okay if you say, leave all the scoring in the hands of White, Pritchard, and Brown. If that's the way you were going, perfectly fine. Get somebody who can do the dirty work so that way you're not being out offensive rebounded 21-8. 21 second chance shots? That's absolutely mind-boggling.
I think another important thing, right? We've talked a lot about, and the Celtics have talked a lot about this, they want to play faster this year, right? Last year they were 29th in pace. They want to play much faster. They're pressing guys on defense more, but offensively too. Well, Celtics only had 2 fast break points last night, and they were both free throws. Like, they have not played with nearly enough pace. They haven't gotten out and been able to run at all. And you do look at this lineup, and one thing I will say that I think is a big positive when you talk about Brown and White and Pritchard and even Simons, Gonzalez, you do have a lot of athletic guys that can get out and run. But when you're
That's the NBA.
But when you're giving up, but even last year, they were such a half-court team. When you're giving up 2 or 3 offensive rebounds on a possession, you're not going to get out and run. You're just going to eventually give up a basket and be taking it out from underneath. And I think we saw that especially last night, where they had very few opportunities to get out and run at all last night. And they didn't have a lot against Philadelphia either.
You know what I saw last night? I saw a regression to what was known, right? Like, if you knew going into the season and the conversation, yeah, we've got to adjust what we're doing as a team and so forth. I just started seeing the threes starting to get chucked up again. I'm thinking like, okay, so now we're going to be shooting a bunch of threes again, and you have nobody to rebound for. There is no it's going to be one and done. So I wonder if there's kind of a disconnect between, I think Mazzulla probably still wants to play the style of ball that he has before, but he doesn't have Tatum, so you can't really do it. And I would even say by not even having Holiday by not even having Porzingis and by having Al Horford, there
even
are things
Cornette.
That you, Cornette.
Like, throw him in there. Like, seriously.
They're running double bigs with Cornette as part of the main. Cornette is getting major run, but here's the crazy thing. Cornette would be the starting center, no question asked, of this team right now, and you would feel you would get quality rim protection, you would get rebounding, you would be able to stop some of these 21 offensive. When is the last time you've heard a team have 21 offensive rebounds in a game?
Yeah.
That's Celtics
got out rebounded 53-37 last night. And they also, too, I mean, it's worth mentioning, they missed 5 free throws.
Almost half Wait. Almost half of the Knicks' rebounds last night? Because I haven't looked at all the... Almost half of their rebounds were offensive?
Yeah, because 21 out of 53. Yeah.
Oh, my God. Like, We're in trouble. What did I tell you? What was the schedule I gave you?
And another thing, too, is they're turning the ball over a lot. Like they had, and I know the Knicks had 20 turnovers last night, but the Knicks have more talent right now. Celtics had 16 turnovers, gave up 23 points off the turnovers. And then you go back to opening night. Celtics...
You saw
only,
Jaylen Brown trying to drill into that paint again, start having flashbacks last
only
night.
Only 9 turnovers on opening night, so, you know, better. But it's like, I think if the Celtics are going to win games, they're going to have to keep that turnover number below 10 on a consistent basis.
I'll tell you what, we'll get Justin Turpin in here in about 5 minutes. It's KJ and Lyons. We'll talk more Celtics here on WEEI. Get in the conversation. 617-779-7937. That's also the text line. Now it is time to trend with Jason.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, and my new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Listen to and follow Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Or just how I pictured it. Pritchard with the final shot as Jaylen Brown watches on what? KJ and Lyons, WEEI, 617-779-7937. Thank you for spending your Saturday with us. We're about a minute away from Justin Turpin. Join us. We'll talk about the Celtics. Maybe we can get his inner thoughts about that. Maybe was the Missoula press a bully move and knew that this was coming? Like, you knew these results were coming and hence did this, get this out the way. And, of course, we've got Halloween.
I want to know what Terp's defensive rating in that media game was.
Awareness is going to be high. You know, the little sliders in 2K.
In Madden, yeah. In Madden, 2K,
yeah. He's got a great awareness, but in terms of, you know, like a dribble, I think everybody in the media thinks his dribble was just absolutely horrible.
I wonder how they come up with the awareness rating on the. Is it just like, hey, we think this guy's an idiot, so his awareness is low? Like, how do you really quantify that?
I think your awareness only is low when you get put in a position that you're not supposed to be in, right? Like,
yeah, maybe.
I think that's what happens. But, you know, look, if I ever find out that secret, that trust me, that could pay me a lot more money than what I'm doing right now.
That's true.
That's for sure. All right, let's bring in our buddy Justin Turpin here, exceptional writer for WEEI.com and, of course, covers the Celtics and all the teams here throughout Boston, New England. Justin, first, we want to get your thoughts on the rebounding difference of 21-8 in terms of offensive rebounds by the Knicks last night over the Celtics. And is this going to be an elongated problem moving forward?
Yeah, first off, I'm not going to have any comments on my defensive rating in the media game. That was embarrassing. We're going to put that behind us. To answer your question, yeah, the rebounding is going to be an issue all year. I mean, that's just the reality of it. Jason Tatum's their best rebounder, and it's not particularly close. He's obviously out indefinitely. Al Horford and Luke Kornet were second and third in total rebounds last year. They're gone in free agency. On a per-game basis, Kristaps Porzingis averaged the second most behind Jason Tatum. The personnel just doesn't allow for it. So, yeah, rebounding is going to be an issue for this team. And how do they make up for it is the question. Can they force more turnovers? Can they get offensive rebounds? Can they speed up other teams into making mistakes? That's how they're going to have to do it, because this is going to be an issue all year. It's something that we talked about throughout the preseason, and we're seeing it early on now that, yeah, the personnel just doesn't allow for it, and this is going to hinder them throughout the year.
Yeah, Terp, it feels like the second apron is the biggest cause of them not being good offensive rebounders, but – with the personnel they have, is there anything in your eyes that they could do a little bit differently to help their – like, is there a different line? Because I know they've been mixing and matching all kinds of different lineups. Is there anything they can do differently to help? Or is this just, hey, man, they don't have the guys and this is the way it's going to be?
for the defensive rebounding, they simply just don't have the guys.
Okay.
And, you know, it stinks to look at it that way, but look at just how small they're playing. You know what I mean? Like, the lineups, the size, the personnel, they just simply don't have it. And so that's going to be an issue. But for the offensive rebounding, you can absolutely make up for that, and something they're going to have to do. And you mentioned the mixing and matching lineups. I think they found some things that work in that department. And that's why I was a little bit unsure of why Josh Minot didn't play last night, because I thought he did a great job specifically crashing in game one and getting offensive rebound, keeping possessions alive, and that's what they need. So they're going to continue to mix and match just to find out what they have right now. Like, they don't know. There's 8 new faces on this roster. You know, 5 actually on standard deals, 3 on two ways. But there's so much new going on that Joe Mazzulla is trying to mix and match and see what they have. So part of that is because of how fast they want to play and because of the pace. They want to keep the intensity and the energy up, and that's why they're doing it. But part of the mixing and matching is also trying to see what they have. So I think they're going to find something that they like in that, because they have to do that. The offensive rebounding is an absolute must because of how bad they're going to be on the defensive glass.
So Justin, it sounds to me that there's something that Mazzulla still wants to hold on that he doesn't have the personnel to do. And then when he attempts to do it, it's looking even worse, right? Because what I saw, especially once you got to the Knicks game, I saw a tale of two philosophies. Suddenly in game two, I see them, okay, they're trying to shoot the threes again like they were, like as if they had last year's roster and did not have the rebounding there to get the missed shots. Or even on the other side, to have the putbacks in from the paint. Like, are we having a crisis here of what Mazzulla really wants to do and knows that he can't do? And when you have that, it becomes a disaster. I'm looking at a disaster. Am I not?
Yeah, it's definitely a fair question, especially after what we've seen in the first two games here. But I think it's too early to call it a crisis or a disaster just yet, right? This is a team. Like I said, 8 new faces on the roster. And more importantly, guys are being asked to do things that they're not typically used to doing. Even Jaylen Brown, right? Like, he talked about it last night. He's still learning how to create for others, how to be that playmaker. That's not something he's necessarily had to do. Like, yes, he's done it when Jason Tatum's been out, but what? That was 10 games last year? Like, it's very small sample size. It's like these guys are not used to being in these elevated roles. Look at Namish Keita as the starting center. Hugo Gonzalez is 19. He's subbing in and playing at MSG for his first NBA minutes. Like, guys are still figuring it out. It was going to be a work in progress regardless, and I think this was evident in the schedule when it came out in August. Like, if you looked at the first 7 games of their schedule, it was brutal. It was very, very tough, and it wasn't an easy way for this team to ease into things. And now they're feeling the urgency, but I don't think I would call it a crisis just yet, especially when you look at the 3-point shooting, and that's something that people are going to get hung up on. They're, I think, 26 of 87. They're shooting below 30%, but only 2 guys are shooting above 30% on the team, Hauser and Jaylen Brown. I mean, your best shooters, Derek White, Anthony Simons, and Peyton Pritchard, all made 200 threes last year and shot 36% or better. They're all shooting below 30%. Like, eventually those numbers are going to come to life a little bit. They're going to come back to the average. And once those threes start falling, you'll see a different team. Like, I really don't think they're that far off. I know it's crazy to say after watching what we've seen the last 2 games, but they've outscored their opponents in 5 of their 8 quarters. It's a matter of, can they do it for 48 minutes? Like, we've seen them put together bits and pieces. It's, can they do it consistently? And I think once the shooting starts coming and once they learn how to play defense for an entire 48 minutes and not allow 2 42-point quarters in back-to-back games, I think we'll see a little bit of turnaround.
So you mentioned Hugo Gonzalez, Terp, and I got to say, I was really impressed by his energy last night. And I know he's still kind of working his way, and he's a rookie. He's 19. So I don't want to overrate the guy, and I don't want to put too much there, but what can we expect from him this season realistically? Because some people have said, oh, he could have been a lottery pick if he came out a year early. He's got all these skills. Brad Stevens has raved about him. But again, only a 19-year-old rookie. I mean, what are some realistic expectations for Gonzalez this year?
I think similar to what you saw last night. I think that's what they want him to be. Come in and kind of be a chaos agent, right? Create the havoc on the boards, pick up full court, like force guys into being uncomfortable. Like, I think it says a lot that his first NBA possession, he picks up Jalen Brunson full court. I think that says a lot about where they believe in him, how they feel about his intensity, how they feel about him as a defender, specifically on ball. I mean, his on ball defense has the potential to be elite in this league. And I think we saw bits and pieces of that last night. So he's never going to be a guy that's going to, like, stuff the stat sheet, I don't think, right? I think he'll do it in rebounds and maybe his assist numbers get up later on. But, like, I don't think he's ever going to be one of those guys. He's going to be just a defender. And that's what they need. They need guys to complement this roster. So I'm with you, John. I know we were texting back and forth last night, and you know he needs to play moving forward. Not only because it could be viewed as a developmental year, and you want to get him minutes. He's frankly one of the better wings on this team, and needs to be on the floor.
Talking with Justin Turpin here on KJ and Lyons, WEEI. Good Saturday to you. Thank you so much for hanging out. Let me move the conversation to Peyton Pritchard. Earlier on the show, I mentioned that there's a part of me believes that Peyton Pritchard is really a starter as part of a marketing plan just to make sure that people come and know that people come see the Celtics and Peyton Pritchard. And with Anthony Simons starting his previous 205 games, I looked at the previous five sixth men of the year. Only Tyler Hero is the guy who's turned into a starter full-time. Do you believe that Pritchard, probably his real calling, is a sixth man and not a starter?
No, I think he can be a starter. I mean, the shooting has not been there. I alluded to it earlier. He's 2-14 to start the year, and that predates the regular season. If you look beyond the regular season, the 2-14 for just the two games here, if you look at the preseason, he didn't shoot the ball well at all either. But he's had slow starts before. I mean, the title year, he came off a great preseason and really struggled the first couple weeks of the season. And you were like, oh, you know, what's going on here? And he really turned it up. So he's in a little bit of a shooting slump, but I give him credit because he's been able to impact the game in different ways. Like,
but he was coming off the bench all that time before, Justin. That's the thing. Like, it's one thing to be a starter. Then it's another thing to be that person that understands how your energy comes in because you're allowed to read the game and get into it. When you're a start, as soon as it goes up, you may be the reason why they need to get somebody in there. I think it's a total different mindset. Even someone like Naz Reid is still a sixth man guy, even though this guy is a big that easily could be a starter for somebody else. I think Pritchard may be that guy that understands adding a spark versus being the fire. There are two different things.
Right, but I just think people are too hung up on the scoring aspect. I mean, he has six assists last night. They had only 19 as a team. That's almost a quarter of the assists came from him. Like, he had five rebounds as well. I think that was the second most on the team. Like, he's doing other things that necessarily aren't, you know, are being overshadowed because he's not shooting the ball well. But he's actually being a contributor in other ways, and his defense as well has come a long way. So I don't know if I would be jumping the ship just yet. It's totally a fair question, right? Because you mentioned it. Like, Tyler Hero is the only one that's actually developed into a starting point guard, like, or a starter after winning Sixth Man of the Year. Like, you know, it's not an easy jump to make. But I think after two games, I don't want to, like, rush to the assumptions, especially when he's playing well. I think he leads the team in assists. Like I said, he's been one of their better rebounders, and that's what they need. They need rebounders. And, I mean, if it's going to come from Peyton Pritchard, who's one of the smaller guys on the floor at 6'2", then so be it. Like, I think he's been okay just with the exception of the shooting, and that needs to be better. Like, I want to be clear on that. He needs to shoot the ball better because, you know, their shooting's a big reason as to why they're 0-2 right now.
Terp, I think one of the things that ties directly to Peyton Pritchard starting is Anthony Simons' defense, right? It's been such a liability the past few years that you can depend more on Pritchard on both ends of the floor. And I'm curious, kind of in your eyes, where is that line going to be where, like, if Pritchard continues to struggle, that you might see Simons end up in the starting lineup? Is it does Simons have to improve his defense to a certain level? Is there a certain amount of time Pritchard would have to keep struggling to? Because, again, I know it's only been two games, but I'm just wondering kind of where that line is, because these are both guys that I think want to be starters and have elements of their games they could be starters. Where is that line going to come in?
Yeah, no, I think I have seen, you know, some improvement from Anthony Simons defensively. So I think the line would probably lie more towards Pritchard, right? If he continues to struggle, maybe they do look at this and like, hey, can you benefit from going back to your role just being a microwave scorer off the bench? Is that something that better suits you rather than being the starting point guard and having the pressures that come with that? So I think it would rely more on how Pritchard's playing more so than the Simons defense, which I honestly do think has been better. Like, sure, there has been lapses and it wasn't going to be fixed overnight, but I think there are certainly improvements from what we saw last year. So, yeah, to answer the question, though, I think it would rely more on what Pritchard does than Simons.
Yeah, I would agree, because this is probably where the Gonzalez conversation comes in, right? Like, if Pritchard's defense and his scoring is there, then you would say, all right, let's lean into Gonzalez to get more defense in there. But if Pritchard's scoring isn't there and just his defense is there, then you say, okay, at what point do you bring in Simons and possibly Gonzalez for the defense? So not a bad thing moving forward, because at least you have a solution for a multi-prong issue when they come. But what are they going to do about the size? Is there any conversation at looking at some of these free agents that are sitting out there to bring in on kind of just a, kind of look-see deal, even a two-way or 10-day? Is there any idea of what they're going to do about the size? Because you can't grow. You can't make a 6 foot two guy a 6'10 guy.
Yeah, right. Right. Yeah, no, I think this is the team they got for right now, at least going into the trade deadline. I think they're going to carry that open roster spot for the time being. And, you know, they'll address the team like they always do throughout the year. But I'd imagine that come the deadline, that's when you have that conversation. And I think that's when the luxury tax thing becomes interesting, right, depending on how this team's playing. Because you have the opportunity to get under the first apron and the luxury tax line by trading Anthony Simons at the deadline. And I think that's kind of going to be an interesting thing to watch. It would save the ownership $40 million, and that would tell you a lot about what this ownership's going to look like. You know, are they going to, you know, try to get under the taxes and try to save money? And maybe it does make sense to do it this year. Or are they going to try to build a contender? Like, I think if Anthony Simons, if they do not view him as part of their long-term equation, which they could, they very well could, they can extend him this summer if they like what they see. But if they don't view him as a long-term piece to this team, then I can see them flipping him and bringing in somebody for size. But it's going to be a relatively cheap player, right? Because if you're going to trade him, I would imagine it's to get under the luxury tax and to get under the first apron. Like, no matter what, it's not going to be a big fish because they're not going to go back into the second apron until the summer. So
I don't need a big fish. I just need a big fish.
A big.
I just need a big.
I think, you know, this is what they're going to go with for now. And, you know, the rebounding is going to be an issue all year, and it's going to be frustrating because people are going to talk about it all year, and it's going to lose them games. But there's just the personnel is the personnel, and I think this is what they're going to stick with for now.
So, Terp, Jaylen Brown is a Supermax player, a Finals MVP. He's a great part of the city, and he is a great player. He's a fringe all-NBA guy. And when you look at his first two games, like Philly, he scores 25 points, shoots 50%, only has 4 assists, but there was the 16 potential assists. Guys just missed a bunch of shots. But then against the Knicks, it's 23 points, but he had 7 turnovers in that game, only 3 assists. There was some real quiet moments, 5 fouls as well. I mean, not to state the obvious, but like they need more consistency on both ends of the floor from Jaylen Brown. Do you have any concerns about that? Because like you said earlier, Tatum only missed 10 games last year. And I think we even saw in the playoffs last year, game 5, Jaylen Brown was terrific against the Knicks. Then game 6, he wasn't that good and no one was really that good and they lost. I mean, should there be any, because this is a, if you're going to be a Supermax guy, one of the things that should come with it is consistency. But I don't think we've seen enough of that going back to last year and obviously the two games this year. Are you worried about that at all? Or am I kind of overrating that?
No, I think that's a totally valid question and a totally valid concern. I mean, you can't have 7 turnovers. That's the reality of it. This is a team that is in no position to be giving away possessions, especially with how bad they are at rebounding the basketball. Like, they cannot be doing that. And Jaylen Brown has been at the head of that snake. So, yeah, no, that's totally a fair question. It's how can he, you know, people have been talking about it, right? Can Jaylen Brown be the number one? Can he kind of rise to that level? And I think he is capable. He's shown it, bits and pieces of it, but it's more so, can he do it consistently, right? Because we've seen him do it. You mentioned it last year in game 5 back at the Garden. Like, he was terrific. Even in game 2 against Orlando, he was awesome in that in the playoffs when Jason Tatum went down with the wrist injury.
Another good one.
So you've seen bits and pieces of it, but can he do it consistently? I think that's where the concern lies, because I think he can do it. It's just a matter of doing it night in and night out, which he's going to have to do at least for the foreseeable future.
All right, Terp. All right. I kind of joked here, like, maybe the Utah game is when we might have a feel-good Celtics feeling in a game. Do you think they can get through this size gauntlet? Look, Detroit size. Cleveland's got size. You've got some pretty big teams. You see 76ers again, and they didn't use their size to win. Is it going to be one of those seasons where it's like, wow, I didn't think it would be that bad?
I still really haven't budged on what this team can be. I mean, honestly, like, when I was looking at the schedule to begin the season, like, that you knew the first 7 were going to be a gauntlet. Like, you knew it was going to be difficult, and you knew they were going to drop games that maybe they shouldn't have, right? That's just part of the learning curve that this team has. Again, they have so many new faces, learning a new style, asking guys to do more things than they're used to. There's just a natural learning curve with that. But I still think this team can be competitive, and I think they're only going to get better. Like, they got better from Philly to New York. I know they lost by more points, but they won 3 of those 4 quarters. You can't get outscored by, 42 to 14 in the second quarter. Like, that just
can't
happen.
You give up 21 offensive rebounds, you're going to lose the game. You're going to lose the game.
You were asking earlier, too, about the last time that a team gave up 20, right? That's only the second time that it's happened in the Joe Mazzulla era, so through three seasons here.
Yeah, I didn't think it was normal.
Three full seasons, yeah. No, it's definitely not normal. And, you know, it's probably my guess is that they're going to have quite a few of those games this year. But, yeah, no, I think there are still winnable games in this little gauntlet here. Obviously, you know, I think they win one of the back-to-back in Detroit or New Orleans. Like, Cleveland's really tough coming back home on Wednesday. They hung tight against Philly as well. I mean, Edgecombe and Maxey went for 70, and Philly had a big fourth quarter. Other than that, like, Boston was in control for most of that game, so I think that's winnable. And Houston's 0-2, but they are supersized. They are a supersized team, so they're going to have trouble with that. But then you got Utah and Washington, so it lightens up a little bit after. But I don't know. I'm still not necessarily budging on where this team can be, because I truly don't think they're that far off. And I know it sounds crazy watching these last two games, but they've had flashes where they can dominate a game. Like, clearly, like I mentioned earlier, they've won 5 of the 8 quarters that they've played. It's just when they've been bad, they've been so, so bad. And I wrote it in my article last night. It's like, yeah, you only get credit for winning the war. You don't get credit for winning the battles that are the quarters. But I think there are some silver linings in winning those battles. And the Celtics are seeing some of that. So I'm still kind of where I was at the beginning of the season with this team, where they're going to be scrappy. They're going to be around 500. They're going to be competitive. So they're going to get there eventually. They're only going to get better. And I think we saw that from game 1 to game 2 already.
All right. He is Justin Turpin of WEEI.com. Does a great job there. Turp, I feel like we could have you on for a whole hour talking about this stuff. But Turp, have a great rest of the day. And before you go, can you give us quickly, can you give us an actual date they get their first win? I know you've kind of talked around it. Is it going to be tomorrow, or are we going to have to wait longer than that?
Yeah, let's go with tomorrow. I think tomorrow's the day.
All right, let's go with tomorrow.
You're motivated. You're ready to go.
Let's go with tomorrow. Terp books it down. Terp, thanks again. Always a pleasure.
All right, guys, anytime.
Yeah, Jalen Duren is probably going to go for 20-20 tomorrow night. I mean, I'd hate to say it. The second was the most offensive rebounds in the Joe Mazzulla era.
I know. That was, you know, I'm not shocked by that, but it is like, that's like, ooh, that's it. Because you think back, like, they had Porzingis and Horford, and before that, they had Robert Williams and Horford. Like, they always had.
This is why you can't even Cornette. This is why you can't even say, you can't even sneeze at what. Think about Luke Cornette literally earned his contract with San Antonio from his for filling for Porzingis last year.
Yeah, if Cornette was on this team, I think they're 1-1 right now. I think they would have beat Philly and maybe a coin flip against the Knicks, but at a minimum, they're 1-1 if Cornette's on. And I'm not sitting here. It's Luke Cornette. He's not a freaking all-NBA guy or an all-star. He's a 7-foot-tall guy. If he was on this team, at a minimum, they'd be 1-1.
I mean, can we go find, like, where is Mason Plumlee at this? Where
DeAndre Jordan just signed somewhere today?
Yeah, for like for like $3 million. Like, that's not going to break an apron. That's not even going to bust a plastic spoon, right? You get Mason Plumlee's playing for the Hornets. Hornets got all those young guys running around. You can't make a phone call to the Hornets and say, look, can you throw Mason Plumlee this way? I mean, rebounds.
And the other thing, too, is, like, they don't have, like, we've talked about, like, the vertical height, like the 7-footers, the 6'11", right. But, like, Luka Garza is really skinny. Chris Boucher is really skinny. Like, Tillman is strong on the inside, and obviously he's not quite as tall. He's strong.
He's 6'8". Yeah.
But they don't have a lot of guys that are tall and strong. Like, you know what I mean? Like, they
probably
don't even
7'2", 54".
Right. Like, they don't even have a guy who's like 6'10" and big. Like, they just don't have that. And I think that's part of this, too. It's not just the height thing. I think they also, at times, are getting out-muscled underneath the basket.
Remember I asked you, there were you guessed right, there were two guys that were 6'10" and over?
Yep.
You know what Kidd is listed as?
What?
7 foot.
I don't think he's that tall.
Doesn't even feel, he feels like he's 6'8" out there. Like, that's the thing. It's, I'm not here. I'm not one of these fans that say, oh, make a deal. Go get this superstar. No. Just go get somebody who's serviceable. For God's sakes, you don't even need someone who can be a person who stretches a big. I don't even want it to be that fancy at this point. Can you get somebody in there who can be a trunk tree, who can snatch a rebound, who can pass it out to somebody who's not part of the offense? Because, look, if you had Embiid, like, let's just say Embiid actually tried to play that game Friday, here's the other thing. If they win that Sixers game, and they should have, the conversation around Philadelphia would be such dysfunction. You saved them. You literally saved them. What do you know how big of a story that is to say on the opening night you don't play Joel Embiid at all in the entire fourth quarter against a team that has no size? Like, that's a story. You're letting these things go. The Knicks, yeah, they're more bodies that can move around and do things. It was going to be a little bit more trouble. I understand that. And even in that game, they were able to ugly up that game enough. They probably bring that down to a final possession or two in that game if they've got some damn size and stop this offensive rebounding mess that's going on and is going to continue to go on. I don't know if this team gets their first win until maybe either the Pelicans, and that may be just because what we're thinking about who the Pelicans are, and I would be saying, Western Conference teams are built a little different these days. Or potentially against Utah where you're like, please let this be the Utah that we think that you... That's November 3rd.
Yeah. It's tough. I mean, Terp mentioned it, and he's right. Like, we knew this when the schedule came out, but I think also the Celtics have not looked as good as even... like, and we knew they weren't going to be as good, right? They're middling team at best, maybe 40 to 42 win team, whatever. But
a 7 seed, maybe.
But they've looked below that for stretches in these first couple games, like the 42-point quarters or the quarters where they themselves can't score. Like, that gives you a little extra concern in the, because how long is it going to take them to figure this out? Because I agree with Turk.
More tank days for AJ?
Yeah, maybe. Hey, he's a Brockton guy, right? But I agree with Turpin that they are going to get better. What worries me is, are they going to start getting better when they're 1-6 or 2-9? And then even if you get better, you've dug yourself in such a hole that you can't really get out of it, you know, even by January. Like, that's kind of what worries me now, is that they're going to dig themselves in such a hole that even when they start to get better, it's not going to matter.
It's like the kid who's been getting all D's and F's and then gets a B on the quiz and says, hey, coach, teacher, look, I got a B. You're like, you think it makes you think you have a C average now? It's still an F.
It sounds ridiculous to say, like, the third game of the season is a must win, and it is. But, like, if you don't win one of these next two games and you're 0-4 and it's Cleveland and then a Philly team that I think you can beat, but you're on the road, then Houston, like, that's that. Talk about it, digging yourself
in a hole. We just don't
want
to be embarrassed as a fan base because people are ready to laugh at the Celtics just because we're 2 years removed from the NBA
that's
championship, all these years in the playoffs. And so to really fall from a hard grace, and then the conversation, unfortunately, will lean on Jaylen Brown. Like, clearly this guy's not a leader. I could just see it all coming, and it's unfortunate.
One thing, and I know we got to get to break. We can get to this more after. These core guys, they're not. It's not just they're not used to their roles. They're also not used to losing. And I wonder how that might affect things, depending on how it goes. We can get into that more later. But
all right, KJ and Lions continues next. Plus, we'll get into Boston sports figures as Halloween candy here on WEEI.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver. Ready for honest conversations about thriving in midlife? Listen to and follow my new podcast, Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
KJ and Lyons, WEEI, 617-779-7937. Let's get to some of these text messages, and then we'll get to the Boston sports figures as Halloween candies. Jason, what you got?
All right, we got a 774 text saying, Celtics are auditioning players right now to see who can play when Tatum comes back. Ugo will take over for Sam Hauser next year. Kata progression is a positive.
Yeah, that's why they're called off-Broadway plays, right? Take that off-Broadway. This is a team 2 years removed from a championship. I'm not asking for a championship roster this year. I'm saying you have one of the 20 best players in the league in Jaylen Brown. His money and his stats say so. All right, as Ring says so, at least put one piece that addresses some of the glaring holes, like the front line, your leading rebounder and scorer is gone. I'm not asking go get another leading scorer, but go get somebody who can rebound.
Yeah, and it's funny because I'm really interested to see how Hugo Gonzalez progresses here. Because like when you talk about who could play with Tatum when he returns, and especially next year after they're spending again, hopefully, knock on wood, I feel like Gonzalez is a guy who could really carve out a role for himself. And if he does, does that make a Simons expendable in a trade, even a Pritchard or a Hauser expendable in a trade? And
at some point, you'll have to keep two because you know Gonzalez is going to be defense, but you don't know if the offense is there.
Because I think right now, their core right now to me, like their next championship core, is Tatum, Brown, and White. And what they got to figure out is what are they going to put around those three guys? And so that is what's going on now. And Gonzalez is one guy that I'm like, I wonder if he can really carve out a role into that next iteration of the contending Celtics.
Can he grow 10 inches?
No.
Next, another text.
Next one is 978. They should have signed Luke Kornet instead of keeping Hauser. That was a big mistake.
Well, they signed Hauser to the extension a couple years ago, so there wasn't. I think one thing in hindsight I will say, and we talked about this at the time, you and I, KJ, and Terp, did they need to do that Jrue Holiday extension before the play? Like when they, because that part of it was they did it so they could trade him.
Yeah.
But if you don't sign him to that, maybe he just becomes a free agent and your financial. But they got Simons for him.
I was thinking thinking the same thing with Hauser, that they would sign him and be able to trade him. I just think he's very much like Yoshida. Not stepped into the contract with the idea of giving that contract to cross-pollinate.
Or should they have tried to sign Kornet earlier? It's tough because like the apron is the apron, and there's much you can do.
I don't know if they would have tried to sign Kornet earlier because they didn't know what Kornet would show himself to eventually be. And when he advanced, it was too late to try and have that conversation with him. Because remember, Joe was like, hey, can you stick around for like maybe $5 million? By this time, it was like, no, this is clearly a $10 million guy. So, yeah, Kornet developed at the wrong time because they already committed to Hauser. You hate to see it, but you need Kornet so much more than you need Hauser. I mean, think about it. You're depending on Tillman for a guy who was barely seeing action over the last year and a half.
Yeah. No, remember they got Tillman at the trade deadline, and he really he hit that 1-3 in game 3 against Dallas.
And has been in hibernation since.
Pretty much. Right. Pretty much. Like, I mean, even when Porzingis was out last year, it was Kornet and Horford most of the time.
Look, you know you're in trouble when Luka Garza is part of your promotional material about this year's team. That's a problem. Two more texts, and then we'll get into Candy for Boston Sports Figures.
Yeah, we got a 857 texter saying, finally some level-headed coverage. Thank you, Terp. Keep up the good work, kid.
Terp, great job.
Yeah, so you know my personal affection for Terp, and it's nothing crazy, you know, so.
Pause.
But when Terp first walked in this building, he was my producer, and I've just always pushed him to go after whatever he wants. So he just has to get on. He has to get that 100-foot yacht if he's going to make anything out of himself here at EEI. So yeah, Terp is on top of it. One more.
The other one was a 617 saying, "Great work, Terp," as well.
See, I see, and it's not even a family member. We could see that it's not a family member. So yeah, Terp is. Does exceptional work here and super proud of what he does here at WEEI. Are you ready to do this, John?
I mostly am.
Mostly am. It sounds like a man who's somewhat ill-prepared for Boston Sports Figures as Halloween candies. Now, why are we doing this? Because by the time John and I are on again next, Halloween would be over. This bit would not make any sense. So David will give us names and you will tell us what type of candy they would be. Be good.
Jason Tatum.
John?
I'm going to go with Snickers here because he's not himself right now. So have a Snickers and get your rehab done as safely but as quickly as possible, please.
In that same vein, I'm going to say Jason Tatum is gummy worms. Why? Because we need to see that flexibility to stretching out those hammies and all those ligaments. We need them to be in part. Plus, gummy worms are the best things invented ever. Next.
Drake May.
I go Kit Kats here. Good candy, dependable candy. In the MVP conversation of candy, but not the actual MVP.
I'm going to go with Snickers because What a getaway from that previous number 10 that we had there. Good gracious. All right, Ramondre. Oops, did I give away? Ramondre Stevenson. Is that the next one on the list?
Ramondre Stevenson.
I'm going to go circus peanuts here because I hate them, but they can be sweet, and sometimes, though, they're not good, and that's kind of what he's been this year.
I don't know if it's a candy, but peanut brittle. Yeah, breakable. If it doesn't come, it's just very hard to chew right now. We still have to wait and see. Next, David.
Stephon Diggs.
KJ, I'm just going to let you take this one. I saw what you wrote. I can't top it.
Pink cotton candy.
I'm just going to leave you with that one.
And blue if it's a boy. You didn't even like that twist there, huh? We'll leave it be. We won't touch that mysterious pink package that also comes in blue flavor, too. Just let you know. All right, next.
Coach Mike Vrabel.
I'm going to go lifesavers here. Guys saved everything with the Patriots.
Now, John and I have not seen each other's answers, but I, too, go with lifesavers just because he's been a solid role of a coach. And look, he's even taken a little bit of a lump for Pineapple back there, dropping all the butterscotch fingers of Ramondre Stevenson. He's not giving up on him. Next.
Celtics coach Joe Mazzulla.
I'm going to go with Jolly Ranchers because they're hard.
Hookah gum. Not even sweet. It's actually nasty. It gets stale real quick. What he did with the media was kind of one of those Bush League deals, trying to be Bazooka Joe, and now he's out there looking like Bazooka Gum with a dried-up team who can't rebound. Next.
BC coach Bill O'Brien.
I'm going to go Milk Duds, emphasis on the dud part.
Yeah, I'm going to go with licorice, and I'm going to go with the black licorice. It's disgusting right now. Next.
Alex Bregman.
Yeah, I didn't have a good one for him because there's no opt-out candy.
Yeah.
So I'm just going to defer to KJ here.
I'm going to go with the Cadbury egg. While it does tasty, it's a bit expensive. And if you're going to pay him Cadbury egg prices, hell no. Next.
The pig, Garrett Crochet.
Yeah, I'm not going to go with the candy here. I'm going to go with beef jerky because he's the war pig.
Yeah, that's it's tough. Yeah, tug. There's tug on that one right there. Wait, hold on a second. I mean,
pause.
I'm going to say for Garrett Crochet, family-sized bag of peanut M&Ms. Diabetic coma worthy, that good. One more.
Red Sox coach Alex Cora.
I'm going to go with nerds here because sometimes he comes into conflict with the nerds in the front office.
That's a bad thing?
Usually not.
That's nasty.
I'm going to say Jolly Ranchers just because the candy's been a bit hard. The flavor hasn't always come together, but altogether, it's been okay. And those are your Boston sports figures as Halloween candies. KJ and Lions continues next. Happy Halloween.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5.
I know where I'm going to bet from now on.
Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, and my new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Listen to and follow Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.